Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us a special guest this evening, and we're going to be talking about Vietnam. And people say, why worry about Vietnam? A lot of water under the bridge since then, first Gulf War, Afghanistan, Iraq. We ought to be worried about that. And I would simply remind you what George Santayana said, and that is that those who do not remember history are condemned to repeat it. Recently, we saw the spectacle of the torture of the Iraqi prisoners at Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq, and you heard people talking, some of the enlisted people who had their pictures taken, saying, look, we were told what to do. We were ordered to do it by the civilian interrogators. And, of course, most people here don't understand. What do you mean, civilian interrogators? Well, they were contract agents there. They were contract agents working in the prisons interrogating the prisoners, and they told us to soften them up. Well, who are these contract agents? We must understand that they are CIA employees. There is a black operation that they take place. Iraq is in large part a CIA war, just as Afghanistan was a CIA-directed war. What most Americans don't understand is during the early phases of the war in Afghanistan, it was primarily fought by special forces and by people from the Northern Alliance, using American aircraft, American precision bombing. America killed, with the help of the Northern Alliance, 31,000 Taliban and Al-Qaeda. We lost perhaps five men at the most. One of the most amazing feats of all time. Now, of course, once they pulled the special forces units out of there, why send in the regular troops, why we've had a rising death toll. But let me tell you that the CIA and the special forces working together are a very effective and lethal tool. And, of course, we saw this in Vietnam. Of course, we never went into Vietnam to win the war. You must understand, we never went there to win. All you heard about fighting communism, we weren't fighting communism. We financed the North Vietnamese by the massive gifts, or at least loans we gave to the Russians, most of which was subsequently written off. And the Russians then financed the North Vietnamese. We were never allowed to do any of the things that were necessary to win. We weren't allowed to mine the harbor at Haiphong or sink a ship in the mouth of the harbor so that new supplies couldn't come in. We weren't allowed to bomb the rail yards there in Haiphong, or bomb the rail lines leading from Haiphong, over which the weapons that were being used to kill our boys were carried. We weren't allowed to bomb the dikes and flood North Vietnam, which would have ended the war. We weren't allowed to hit the hydroelectric plants there. We weren't allowed to bomb the Ho Chi Minh Trail, that over which the trucks, Ford Motor Trucks, made at the Gorky plant. Yes, Ford Motor Trucks made at the Gorky plant in Russia, were carrying the supplies to kill our boys in South Vietnam. And of course, where do you think North Vietnam got their sophisticated MiG fighters? Do you think that they made those in the huts in North Vietnam? Of course not. They came from the Soviet Union. And their radar-guided anti-aircraft that shot our planes down, they came from Russia. And, of course, we were funding Russia all during that time, during that period. We built the largest truck plant anywhere in the world, the Kama River truck plant, with your money and your technology for the Russians, so they could build trucks to send them down to into North Vietnam to carry their supplies to kill our boys. We gave Russia, lent them countless billions of dollars, both the United States and our good allies in the West, who we subsidized, and that money was sent then to North Vietnam in the form of military equipment to be used to kill our boys. How do you think it was possible that a country the size of the state of Mississippi was able to fight a country the size of the United States, the greatest power, military power in the world, and that great military power lost the war? Do you really think that happened unintentionally? We went to Vietnam not to defeat communism, because we've been financing communism since its inception. And those of you who haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or Professor Sutton's work of Western Technology and Soviet Economic Development, or a book we carry entitled Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution, need to get that equipment, that information. But I think probably the simplest book would be mine, The Brotherhood of Darkness. To understand, we financed Russia and communism since the inception, creating the best enemy money could buy, and we certainly did that during the Vietnam War. We fought in Vietnam not to defeat the communists, not to prevent the domino effect. We fought there as a diversion so we could change America at home. And while our flag-draped coffins were returning from Vietnam, and weeping widows and weeping mothers, why, of course, they changed our immigration laws. They took God and prayer out of our schools. They found a woman had a right to an abortion. We began to centralize all power in Washington, D.C., and destroy the very fabric of our federal system. We took the Great Society and socialized medicine, Medicare, which has led to the crisis where we are today, because Medicare and government interference in medicine is what's created the crisis that we have. And, of course, all the welfare programs and the socialist programs and federal aid, expanding federal aid to education, which is responsible for destroying our educational system. All of it began in that era. And if you don't believe this was done intentionally, you need to read the article written by McGeorge Bundy, a member of Skull and Bones, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, the national security advisor to both President Kennedy and President Johnson, the man who did more than anything to involve us in Vietnam, perhaps more or equally as much as Robert Strange McNamara. And in the January 1967 issue of Foreign Affairs magazine, McGeorge Bundy explains what Vietnam was really all about. He said, you know, we really shouldn't, if you believe in the great new departures in health and education and welfare, you shouldn't say we ought to pull out of Vietnam. For exactly the opposite is the case. The road forward at home is by persistence in Vietnam, and a pullout in Vietnam would lead to a strong opposition to our domestic policies. And that's what was all about, the domestic policies, while our attention was focused overseas. We were losing our freedom here at home. And the same thing is happening again with, as far as Iraq is concerned, and in the name of fighting terrorism or whatever we're doing over there, why, of course, we're losing more and more freedom at home. And, of course, the government is beginning to monitor everything and control everything. And the USA Patriot Act has redefined terrorism. That's the major problem with it. So that anybody objects to what the government is doing, who opposes the government, or could very well one day be considered a terrorist and have the same rights as Padilla. And you say that couldn't happen here? I'm sure the people in Germany felt the same way. Well, let's get back to Vietnam, because our guest this evening was in Vietnam. And Vietnam was a CIA-directed war. I personally talked to the American ambassador, William H. Sullivan, to General Lewis Wald, a four-star Marine general. Both of them told me we could have won the war in 2 months if we'd been allowed to, but we were never allowed to. It was just a giant social experiment. And, of course, there was a program there that was known as Operation Phoenix. And if you think that the things went on at Abu Ghraib prison were horrible, you really need to know about Operation Phoenix. And the fact you haven't heard about Operation Phoenix is simply a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. David, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
And it's a pleasure to be on the program, and I've been listening to you, and it's kind of hard to hear you stole all the thunder here. But I agree with everything you say. And let me start off by introducing myself. My name is Dave Tutaschini. I was a cryptographic systems specialist. In case you don't know what that, the listeners don't know what that means, is we worked with the equipment that encoded and decoded all the top secret communications that went between the Pentagon and the field generals and the commanders out in the field. And I was Antonsud Air Base from April 1970 to 1971. And the reason I had that clearance is not because I had a need to know. It was because I had access to the equipment. And if you have access to the equipment and you're fixing the equipment and you're maintaining the equipment, obviously, you're going to see what comes over that equipment. And I have seen so much stuff that went on that it puts all of that stuff that you said, Dr. Stan, it puts it all in a different light. Because it validates everything. Everything you say is valid. It's not some pipe dream. It's not some conspiracy theory that somebody dreamed up to make a radio program. It's all true. And it's like Robespierre said during the French Revolution, audacity, audacity, always audacity. And the truth is that the more incredible something is, the less that people believe it. But it's true. And it's incredible what they did over there. Not only the Operation Phoenix, taking out political figures, assassinations, arranging for accidents to happen, so to speak, but the mind control. It's the control of information that was so incredible.
Well, and I think that the average American soldier, the average American Army and military officer is a good person. He is motivated by high ideals. But, you know, we have within our society a very dark force. And much of that operates within the CIA. Now, a lot of people go into the CIA thinking they're fighting for God and country. Within this makeup of this organization are people who have a very dark side to them, who are really can use torture and murder and assassination on a scale that the average American doesn't understand really takes place. But the CIA assassinated people in Vietnam, literally thousands of them, and you never heard of Operation Phoenix. So let's talk a little bit about Operation Phoenix. What was it? Why should people be concerned about it?
Well, what it was primarily was it was a government within a government, so to speak. It was the CIA is an you have to understand something about the CIA before you understand anything about Operation Phoenix. The CIA is a totally autonomous organization. They are responsible and accountable to no one. They are funded within themselves. They are not subject to any discovery that a normal citizen can do. Like you can send away a Freedom of Information Act request to the federal government for just about anything. The two exceptions that are notable are the budget of the CIA and anything that has to do with Homeland Security. And those two things are exempted from the law.
And, of course, not only do they have a regular budget, they have a black budget where they get money from smuggling drugs and from other illegal and illicit activities. And anybody who doesn't believe the CIA is involved in drugs, has not read the General Service report put out by the General Service, I guess it was, going into the CIA, drug smuggling activities. It was actually up. On their website, it may still be, but we pulled it down. We can make it available for people if they want to read what the Inspector General said about the CIA's involvement in drugs. A lot of people say, that couldn't be true. We're fighting drugs. Well, you talk to the people in the FBI and the DEA, and they will tell you that time after time, they're ready to make a big drug bust, and in comes the CIA saying, oh, no, this is part of a special CIA operation. You can't, just got to let this go through. We're going to use this to get to the big boys. Well, they're not getting to the big boys. This is how they're raising money for CIA black operations. So they have a regular budget, they have a black budget, and they have a very dark purpose.
That's correct, Dr. Stan. And a lot of people have been, some of the listeners may have heard of Air America, where they busted people who were smuggling drugs aboard military aircraft coming back from Southeast Asia. Well, the operation that was doing that was part of something even bigger. It's probably best to put yourself into a CIA agent's shoes. Back in the early 1960s, when we started sending advisors over there, they got on the plane and they landed at Saigon Airport, and like you and me, they get in impressed by two things immediately when they get off that plane. The first thing they get impressed by is when they open the door, it's 114 degrees in the shade but 90% humidity. And as they come down the stairs and walk into the airport, the next thing that hits them is this little papasan running around with a Samsonite suitcase full of 98% pure heroin that he'll part with for, probably $100. And if you and I get off that plane and said, if I could get a couple of kilos of this stuff home, I could be set for life because I could step on it 32 times and I could make, $500,000. They're not thinking like that. They're not thinking in kilos. They're not even thinking in tons. They're thinking in cargo planes full. And what they did in Southeast Asia many, many times is they had these C-130 cargo planes flying in with supplies and ammunition and bombs and, all the things that you needed to run the war. And those planes are not flying back empty. They would set up these corrugated steel runways in the middle of the jungle. They'd take a little diversion from their assigned route, land in the middle of the jungle, and they load up the plane with just about anything you could think of, take back off again, get refueled in flight with the C-5As, and come into the airport in California, where they were exempt from customs. And hundreds of tons of that stuff, heroin, you name it, has been shipped over here, and it's probably still in storage being sold.
And let me just, for our listeners who find this difficult to believe, we have a 4-tape set. Is there really a war on drugs? And you will actually have 6 interviews with people who tried to do something about the CIA's involvement in drugs, and some of them actually ended up being sent to prison, or certainly efforts to send them to prison. We have a wonderful book. It's called Defrauding America by Rodney Stitz. His second book, Drugging America. We have a book entitled Barry and the Boys, the story of Barry Seal, who was the most famous of all drug smugglers. And of course, Barry and the Boys were the CIA agents he worked with. And of course, they ended up assassinating Barry Seal because he knew too much. We do carry that book as well. The information is all out there. We actually, there are other books we could tell you about. Compromise, Bush, Clinton, drugs at MENA Airport. But I think if you get Drugging America, Defrauding America, Barry and the Boys, and our 4-tape set, and of course, try to access, or if you can't get in touch with us, we could get you copies of the Inspector General's report of the CIA and drugs. Now, this is all part of the way CIA raises money for its many illicit programs, among which are planting people in the media to influence what the American people think. If you doubt that that happens, the book you want to get is written by General William Odom, formerly head of the NSA, in his book, Fixing Intelligence, published just last year. He can't tell you what the CIA is doing. He has to ask questions like, should the CIA be assassinating people or carrying out assassinations? Should the CIA have journalists planted in the media? Should the Defense Department be collecting dossiers on American citizens? If you want the exact page quotations, where you can find that in the book at your library, if you really care to find out if what I'm saying is the truth, just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Ask for a free copy of our April newsletter, and we give you the page quotations, where you'll find General William Odoms, who's trying to tell the American people what's really going on, but because he signed all the security statements, he really can't say too much, but he can ask those questions. And I think in asking the questions, he's letting you know what's going on. Our guest this evening is David. He was over there. He knows what's going on. When we get back, we're going to let him begin telling you about what he realized when he was over in Vietnam. We sent our boys halfway around the world to fight for freedom. We had Fidel Castro 90 miles off our shore. If we wanted to fight communism, we could have gone there. We weren't fighting communism. We were changing America. We'll be right back here at Radio Liberty. Well, David, tell us a little bit about what you learned when you were over there and what was really going on.
Well, what I learned primarily was from looking at the communications that went back and forth between the Pentagon and the commanding officers over there in Nam. What went on was basically we were stuck between a rock and a hard place with what went on in with the VC ducking into Cambodia, particularly a place called Parrot's Peak, which is just east of Long Binh. And what they would do is they would come down the Ho Chi Minh Trail, which ran through Cambodia. They'd come into Vietnam for 2 or 3 miles. They'd launch missiles and all kinds of artillery and mortar shells and stuff at the bases around there. And then when they got chased by our troops, they would duck back into Cambodia. And of course, the Geneva Convention says that you can't cross the border and go into a neutral country's territory.
Well, of course, this really wasn't true. I mean, we had bombed Cambodia. The president lied to the American people. We were sending special forces people in there, of course, under CIA orders. But, of course, they were told that if they got caught, they would be denied, that they would be considered as deserters. But they were ordered to go in. This was the thing. And anybody who hasn't read The Expendable Elite by Colonel Daniel Marvin, we do carry that as well. He headed a special forces team, worked with the CIA, was going into Cambodia, but it was only the logical thing to try to stop the Viet Cong attacks because we had officially given them sanctuary.
That's correct. The higher-ups knew this, that they would, you know, it would look very bad if they went into Cambodia and everybody found out. So they kept it under wraps. And the way they kept it under wraps is they just denied it. One of the most memorable incidents that I had was in April, just at the end of April of 1970, when I was running the equipment in the comm center there, and I saw the sortie come in for F-14s to go in and napalm a suspected munitions cache just inside the Cambodian border. And the way they covered it up, they said that the missile launcher on the plane, the controlling part of the plane that controlled the munitions and the launch of the missiles was called an AEC. It was like a computer, so to speak, and they said it went malfunctioned.
Oh, malfunctioned! It just happened to take out this thing they wanted to take out.
Right, and what happened was when the ordnance hit the target. Usually, when there's munitions stored somewhere, when a missile hits the target from a plane, you have a secondary explosion, and there was no secondary explosion. So they sent in the LRP teams, the long range reconnaissance patrols, and what they found was that they bombed the schoolhouse, and they took out 40 children, burned them beyond recognition. And when you heard, we were right next to the radio room, so we were privy to all of this, and when we heard hardened combat soldiers describe what they saw, it just tore us up.
But the thing is that I don't think that was done intentionally at all. It was an accident. War is a terrible thing, and you can't avoid this sort of thing. And it's quite understandable that you would want to take out the bases, the sanctuary for your enemy. When you're in war, you're there to protect yourself. You're there to kill the enemy. You're there to keep your own men from being killed. And so much of what was done was quite understandable from that point of view. We'll be back here in just a moment with our special guest this evening on Vietnam. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and David was talking about the time when one of our planes, of course, they weren't supposed to shoot into Cambodia, but they were being used as a sanctuary for the Viet Cong, and everything was to deceive the American people, but the military was doing what the military is assigned to do, and the assignment of the military is to kill the enemy and to destroy as much as they can to force them to surrender. And so they weren't going to be bound simply by the rules of war. Our government never should have given the enemy sanctuary in Cambodia. And so they would find one or another pretense for going in. On this instance that he was describing, they missed their target and hit a schoolhouse and burned 40 children beyond recognition. Pick up the story there, David.
Yes, Dr. Stan. When we found out that happened, that these little innocent children lost their lives due to an American napalm strike, there was much nervousness because this could have been blown up into an international incident. You could imagine what the liberals would do with you know, this was, you know, after Milei and all of that. To have this hit the news would have been detrimental to what we were trying to do. And of course, if one side doesn't go by the rules, then the other side is you know, you can't play by the rules and have somebody else break the rules. You can't, you know, play a game of Fizbin where, you know, it's only good, you know, for one side and not good for the goose and good for the gander, so to speak.
But war is not a game. War is a deadly. War is brutal. War is cruelty. War is everything that is evil and wrong in the world, and yet we sent our boys halfway around the world to fight in a war we never intended to win for a 10-year period, and simply they were simply sacrifices. There, as the people of Cambodia, the people of South Vietnam were, isn't it amazing we never talk about the million South Vietnamese who died in the war? We never talk about the 2 million North Vietnamese who died in the war. Isn't it interesting we talk about our 58,000 American soldiers, and we should be concerned about them. But we should be concerned about the people who sent them over and what their real motivation was. And the same evil forces, the same skull and bones people who were there in power in the Second World War, that was William Stimson, Secretary of War, his good friend McGeorge Bundy, National Security Advisor during Vietnam. Why we find these same people from these same occult societies in positions of power in both political parties today. So, David, what was the outcome of this tragic bombing there in Cambodia? How did they keep it secret from the American people?
Well, they kept it secret by they just didn't say anything to anybody. They made it to be like an accident, and they told us that of course we knew that nothing got out of that comm center. You know, once we left that building, which was a bomb-proof room 40 feet below the ground, it was an act of treason to say anything to anyone, so we just kind of kept quiet. We had to keep quiet. There was no ifs, ands, or buts about it that we would be killed if somebody, you know, got caught us saying something. So that's the way they kept it.
You mean they were going to kill an American soldier for letting that information out?
You would disappear. You would be missing in action. You would be lost in the South China Sea. You would get into a car accident. You would die of hemorrhagic fever or whatever. You would something would befall you, believe me, that you would not open your mouth anymore after that.
And so then I would just simply fast forward to recently when Tillman, the football player who forego a $3 million contract with the Arizona football team, went off to fight in Afghanistan. First of all, he'd done his tour of duty a year in Iraq and safely, and then he was assigned to Afghanistan. And he's killed. Well, that's the tragedy of war. But suddenly the government announces he was killed by friendly fire. Now, why would the Pentagon announce that this man, who is, in my estimation, a true hero, was killed by friendly fire? It was done very intentionally and very purposely to disillusion the American people with the war. They're playing games with our minds, and until we can understand that you would never release that information, because they can control the information coming out of a battle zone if they want to. And this they put out for the whole world to know. Oh, this terrible mistake. We kill this true American history by friendly fire. Believe me, they knew exactly what they were doing. The tragedy is they don't want the American people to know that they know what they're doing. The American people simply take everything at face value without realizing we're constantly being manipulated. And once you begin to see that and understand, they can cover things up, they can reveal things. What you actually hear, what you actually see on television, what you read in the newspaper is what they want you to read. And the controversy between the right and the left is like the controversy between Abbott and Costello or certainly between Laurel and Hardy. It's all play acting, so you think you're getting both sides. You're ready enough. We'll be back in just a moment with David as we explore Operation Phoenix. If you've never heard of it, you should. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening, David, was in Vietnam. Pick up the story from there, David. And so they basically suppressed the story of this tragedy, this tragic happening in Cambodia?
Yes, they did. I can tell you of one specific incident where someone let some information leak out and what was done to silence him. The man I'm talking about, I don't remember his name. He was a Vietnamese courier. His job was to carry information from Tan Son Nhut Air Base to the Vietnamese embassy in Saigon. And it came to pass that he was suspected of leaking information to the Viet Cong and to the NVA. So what they did was they planted some documents in his papers that he was carrying. And the documents, they called the documents seed documents. And they were false information saying that they were going to strafe a target somewhere out in Fubai somewhere, let's say. And the information was totally bogus. So then they sent alert teams out to this village that they said they were going to bomb, which they really weren't going to bomb. And when they saw the sandbags going up around the village, they knew that this man had leaked the information. So the operatives sneaked into his apartment one day when he was gone. He was known to smoke cigars. They sneaked into his apartment, and they had an old type smoke detector, the ones with the light bulbs and the car horns inside. They took the thing apart. They disconnected the car horn and packed about a half a pound of C4 inside the smoke detector, put it back together, put the blasting cap tied it to the horn and put the thing back together. And on his ashtray on the table, which hadn't been emptied in a couple of days, they dumped an M16 shell, the gunpowder from an M16 shell, and mixed it up with the ashes that was in the ashtray. Now, that wouldn't blow up, but it would make a nice wolf of smoke when you put the cigarette out or a cigar out in it. So sure enough, the guy comes back to his apartment in the evening. He puts out a cigar in the ashtray. The gunpowder ignites, and it makes a big wolf of smoke, sets off the smoke detector and blows his apartment and him to pieces. And the story in the Stars and Stripes that day was Saigon Hotel hit by a VC mortar. So, and it didn't look like it was hit by a mortar because it blew the whole top of the hotel off into the street. So this is the kind of way that they deal with people. They make it look like accidents. They make it look like an act of war, an act of aggression by the enemy, but it really it's an inside job. They get rid of you one way or another.
Well, that's one way to take care of traitors.
That's correct.
Well, the trouble is that war is hell, war is violence, and that war is cruelty, and you can't put it in any other terms. So let's talk about Operation Phoenix, because you certainly were well aware of this secret CIA operation that's been concealed from the American people all through these years. Tell us about Operation Phoenix.
Operation Phoenix was, Dr. Stan, it was a covert operation to take out anyone who was opposed to our agenda in Vietnam. And that could mean a political figure, that could mean a diplomat, a soldier, anyone who was opposed to or knew something about or could damage the war effort. He was dealt with in very, drastic ways.
Now, because these were Vietnamese civilians?
Mostly there were Vietnamese civilians and Vietnamese military.
All right, fine. Now, were these people who were actively a Viet Cong, or were these just unsympathetic with American policy?
It could be either or. Mostly they were unsympathetic civilians who were rabble-rousers against the American agenda in Vietnam.
So what happened to these people, and how were they dealt with?
They were dealt with in a variety of ways. They were killed.
All right, now this was a CIA operation, wasn't it?
Right.
And they would use, I'm sure, special forces or special military people assigned to the CIA, but it was primarily a CIA operation to take care of people who disagreed with American policy.
Right. They would recruit from within the military. In other words, say they needed somebody shot from a long distance. Well, they'd go out to the the Black Berets or the Green Berets or one of these guys that come up from Tennessee with his own rifle, and he'd sit up in the tree and he'd blow your head off from 2 miles out and not think anything about it. You know, all of a sudden your head explodes while you're sitting on the sidewalk eating a sandwich or something, and no one knows where the shot came from because it came from, you know, an incredible distance away.
But of course, don't you think the people who carried out these operations really believed that they were killing enemies, probably that they were these killing spies or people who were, responsible for killing Americans?
Absolutely, and most of the time they were killing people who were responsible for killing Americans. And it's unfortunate that we had to deal with people that way, but I can see where the justification came in, because especially when you're dealing with enemies who are, you don't even know who they are. Most of the time you're talking to a person and he's your enemy, and he's looking to kill not only you but your whole squadron, your whole platoon. And when you find this out, it's the only way to deal with these kind of people, because look at what happened over in Saudi Arabia. Those people have dictated to us how they want to be dealt with. And our kindness, our going by the rules, so to speak, to them is a joke. It's a joke. And they'll only take advantage of it.
Well, but how did we know that, for instance, the people who were being killed really were, antagonistic to America? How were the people who were to be killed assassinated, picked? Could it be that if you didn't like somebody, you could turn their name in and have them killed?
Well, you could, but the validation of something like that goes a lot. You know, it doesn't just go on somebody's word. You just don't turn somebody in and they'll go on and knock them off just because you say so. Usually, there's a very involved and very detailed investigation on someone's activities before they would do this, because first of all, it's a very risky thing to do. If you get caught, the United States government is not going to stand behind you.
In other words, if you are an assassin, you are told what to do, and you get caught, why, they're going to say, we didn't tell you to do that?
Right, that's on you. You know, a Mission Impossible thing, the secretary will disavow any knowledge of your actions. That's precisely what they did.
Yeah, I think they call it plausible deniability.
Right. This guy's a lunatic. He was AWOL. He's got a history of mental disease. He's got this. He's got that. He's a little wacko. We don't know where he was for the last 3 days. We don't have nothing to do with him. And they'll deny it. And they'll just leave you. You know, they'll leave you swinging the breeze, because that's on you. When you are a member of such a strike force, you know, you're out working for Operation Phoenix. You know the risk. You know the risk going in. It's not like that, you're under the impression that the government's going to stand behind you and then they turn their back on you. These guys knew what they were doing when they signed up for this duty.
And so they were signed up as assassins. Was that pretty well it?
That's pretty well it. They were signed up as assassins. They were signed up as, a lot of people were interrogators. If you think that what happened in Abu Ghraib was something, that was nothing. That was nothing compared to what they were doing over there to get information out of people.
Well, now, of course, was this...
I can say they did on the radio.
Well, was this being done by the CIA? Was this being done by South Vietnamese who would use torture? Or were the CIA and the South Vietnamese working together to extract information from people?
Well, the CIA most often operated on their own, but they did work with the QC, the Quan Chan. They had people coming from, say, the U.S. Army. They would handpick certain people, and they would turn them over to the South Vietnamese QC, the Quan Chan, for training. And they would train these people not to have any conscience or any qualms about killing people at all. They would train you by just, taking you out onto a street one day and just walking down a road, and they'll tell you, just go kill that person over there. And you're supposed to take your gun, go up and blow the person's head off, and not have any remorse whatsoever.
No, wait a minute, but who is this person they were killing? Was this an enemy, or was this just to demonstrate?
Somebody was walking the street.
Somebody's just walking in the street.
The train. just walking the street.
And they weren't guilty of anything at all. This was just to prove that you would do what you were told to do.
Correct. And it's like the gangs they have here today, the Bloods. They just, you know, pick a person on the street, and they'll cut them just for the sake of cutting them, to prove that you can do it.
No, but this was part of the training that was gone into this Operation Phoenix?
Some of it, not all of it, but that's some of it. Another part of the training was how to interrogate people. They you wouldn't believe the ingenious, in quotes, things that they used to do to get people to spill the beans, so to speak. If you have somebody in your custody and they have information that could possibly save a lot of American lives, they're going to do whatever it takes to get that information. They're going to do whatever it takes. Abu Ghraib was mild in comparison. I mean, I don't even know if some of your listeners could stomach a graphic description of one incident I know where they tortured a woman to, you know, half to death to try to get her to tell them where munitions cache was.
Well, I don't think we need to do anything more than to say it's pretty graphic, but this is what war is all about, and there is no way to make it nice, there's no way to make it gentle, there's no way to make it gentlemanly. That's why you want to avoid going to war. Now, to understand the war in Vietnam, you have to understand what General Fletcher Prouty told me, Colonel Fletcher Prouty. He was the man who was immortalized in Oliver Stone's film on JFK. He was the colonel who supposedly sat on the bench and told Jim Garrison, the crusading attorney prosecuting attorney in New Orleans, that there was a conspiracy behind the assassination of John Kennedy. But Fletcher Prouty told me at the end of the Second World War why there were massive stores of weapons on Okinawa and other Pacific islands. Half of those were sent at the end of the Second World War to South Korea in preparation for the coming war there, and the other half was sent into Vietnam to Ho Chi Minh in preparation for his war with the French, and then subsequently for his war with the Americans. Long-range planning. Why would you arm your enemy? Why, we've always created the best enemies money could buy. And if you haven't seen my interview with the Professor Sutton, who used to be at the Hoover Institute until he told the truth, and then after testifying before the Republican National Convention in 1972, he returned to Palo Alto in California to his office, only his name had been taken off the door. His telephone had been disconnected. You're not supposed to tell the truth about how we create the best enemies money could buy. We have an interview with him. We have his book he wrote, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy. Both are available through Radio Liberty. And so it was that we were involved in a 10-year war with Vietnam, North Vietnam, a war we never tried to win, although the ambassador, William H. Sullivan, told me personally we could have won the war at any time in 2 months. He said, I'm not even a military man. I could have won the war in 2 months if I just had a couple of, a division of men. We could have easily taken out North Vietnam. General Lewis Walt, 4-star Marine general, told me the same thing. But we couldn't let the boys on the ground know that. We couldn't let the people back at home know it wasn't a real war. And when you're involved in this sort of thing, the military does what it has to save its soldiers. And so you're really more or less justifying Operation Phoenix because it was a military necessity?
Well, I'm not trying to justify it. I'm just trying to explore the rationale of why this was done. This whole thing isn't about fighting communism. It isn't about protecting our country. The whole thing and what's going on over in Iraq right now reminds me of Job chapter 2, where the devil says to God, yea, skin for skin, all that a man hath, he will give for his life. So if you scare the American people, you know, bad enough, if you get them to tremble at the thought of terrorism, if you make the threat ominous enough and real enough, they will give up their freedom, they'll give up their money, they'll give up everything in order to feel safe. That's what this is all about right now, and that's what it's been all about all along. And this, like I said, the CIA was dealing drugs over there. That's probably why President Kennedy got killed, because he wanted to pull up out of there. And the CIA wasn't having no part of that, because that was that market, that drug market over there, is it could create such a windfall profit for the CIA under the table, because the stuff that they're doing could not be funded with. I don't think there's not that much tax money to fund what they do. And you know, it's strange. It's un-American. It's what it is, because the Constitution does not, you know, does not authorize CIA or any of this stuff.
Well, unfortunately, this is the reality of what we have to live with. And if you understand that there are really spiritual forces at work and there really are evil people, then you can begin to understand this. You can understand why good people do terrible things in the name of goodness. In other words, we're protecting our troops. You know, we have to do this. We want to win the war. The enemy is ruthless. We will be equally ruthless. And that's what Abu Ghraib was. And that's one reason we released those films intentionally to the whole world, to try to intimidate the Arabs and let them know we would be just as violent as they would be. But in the process, we tended to discredit America, everything we stand for as a Christian nation. And that is the great tragedy. And of course, what we're doing is inflaming the anger of Arabs throughout the world. And we will soon be involved in World War III. And don't think for one minute it's not coming. In fact, as I look at Ezekiel 38 and 39, I tremble when I see the similarities between what's described there and what is taking place today. Well, our telephone number for our listeners up there in the Great Northwest, if you'd like to call in, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And, of course, our listeners up in the eastern Washington, many of them will be leaving us, although David will be staying into the next hour, and we really want to explore Vietnam, because we don't understand the past, why we are condemned to repeat it. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8922. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. David, you have a website. Would you like to get that out for our listeners here?
Yes, it's going to be put up in the next couple of weeks. The website is going to be www.telsonusa, T-E-L, T as in Thomas, E-L, S-O-N, USA.com.
T-E-L-S-O-N-U-S-A. What will they find on your website?
They're going to find basically more or less what we talked about here. They're going to find links through a lot of sites that have the same information that we're talking about here, and information on several books that I've written. One of them is a 1,000-page manuscript on Vietnam poetry. It's from an emotional perspective. Someone who's 19 years old going over there for the first time and having his heart broken because of what he sees his country's doing, and it's going to be one heck of a website when I'm done with it.
All right, fine. Well, we'll certainly look forward to having you back on to talk about it. Right now we've got Jonathan. He's calling from Spokane, and I think he wants to tell us about Dean Gotcher, who's going to be there next week, incidentally. Dean will be our guest here Monday or Tuesday evening of next week. You'll certainly want to hear. He is one of the finest speakers that we have, explaining how they're playing games with our mind with something called Diaprax or Hegelian dialectics. Or Jonathan, want to tell our listeners how they can hear Dean Gotcher, who's going to be speaking in Eastern Washington next week?
Yes, sir. First of all, I'd like to compliment on your show. I've been listening to it recently, and it's very good. But Dean Gotcher is going to be in Spokane on July the 9th, and he's going to be speaking at the Coffee House, which is at 1231 North Washington Street. And that is one block north of Boone and across the street from the North Point Tower. And the doors will open at 6:30, and the meeting will start at 7 o'clock, and coffee will be available for that meeting. The second meeting will be on July 10th, and that will be at 2200 West Monroe Road at the Wayside Community Center. And Monroe Road is approximately 5 miles north of Hastings, which, if you're on North Division, is the last intersection as you're heading outside of Spokane on Highway 395 Division, turns into Highway 295, and you head north for about 5 miles, and then you turn left, which would be west onto Monroe Road, and 395 still has a median there in that section, and there's a brown sign just off of Monroe that says Farm Museum. Now you want to head down in that direction, and the meeting will start at 9 o'clock. The doors will open at 8:30, and that one will last until 5 o'clock at night. So it's going to be an in-depth meeting.
Now it's going to be all day. Is that going to be all day then? Saturday? What? Friday or Saturday? What?
Saturday. Yes, that'll be all day. From
all
9
day
to 5.
Saturday, and it starts at 9 o'clock in the morning. It goes through to 5 in the evening. And Dean is one of the few people who can talk all that length of time, and you'll be fascinated by what he has to say. His information is pivotal to an understanding of how they're controlling the minds of the American people. And there's a planned program. They know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the people to know. So, again, that meeting is, what's the date of it, and where is it going to be one more time?
That meeting is on July the 10th, and that it'll be at 2200 West Monroe Road at the Wayside Community Center.
All right, fine. Do you have a telephone number people could call if they want to get more information?
Yes, they can feel free to call me. Area code is 509-276-1281, and I'm home from 6 to 9 at night.
Give that phone number one more time.
276-1281.
And the area code is 509?
Yes.
Okay, fine. And if you possibly can get to hear Dean, do it. You'll find an unforgettable experience. Thank you so much, Jonathan. I appreciate so much you being with us. And your job is to tell other people about our radio programs and get them listening the same way. We'll do everything we can to back Dean Gotcher's effort.
Oh, bless you, sir.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, fine. And so if you're out there and you have a quick question, before we have to go to the hour break, our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And until you understand that the military does what it has to win a war. And the one thing that Rush Limbaugh says, and I agree with him, the purpose of the military is to kill people and to destroy things. And that is what they're very, very good at. And that's what you expect, because the purpose of military is to win the war. Only they weren't allowed to win the war in Vietnam. They were just allowed there to kill people and destroy things. But because of Robert Strange McNamara and Big George Bundy and the other people within the elite group who were really using the war as a distraction so that they could transform America and bring about the Great Society programs and all the other things we talked about earlier, when you understand that, you understand why we fought a war for 10 years and then lost the war, because we lost the war. We abandoned thousands and thousands of our men. They've lied to you about that as well. And if you haven't seen our 4-tape set, why the men we left behind, or read Douglas's wonderful book, Dr. Joe Douglas's wonderful book, Betrayed, you need to get that information. Our video, One Man Came Back, the story of what happened to Bobby Garwood, who dared to defy the elite who rule America and come back. And how they set out to destroy him, because he was supposed to die there with the others, the other men we left behind. Incredible stories that you're not going to hear through other places, and so they're both available through our ministry by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And unless we understand what happened in the past, why we will continue reliving these same nightmares over and over again. Well, David, we've got just a moment or two more to talk about Phoenix before we have to take the break here. And really, Phoenix, then, from your point of view, was a program that was necessary to do away with people within the civilian community who opposed American policy?
That's correct. It was also more subtle than that. On the other side of Phoenix was the was a psychological operations, and I know a lot more about that than I do about the actual military operations.
All right, fine. Well, then let's save that for the next hour, because and so this is the time when I need to remind our listeners in the Great Northwest, many of whom will be leaving us shortly unless they have access to the Internet, where they can listen to our programs at RadioLiberty.com, or to the shortwave, where they can pick us up at 7.535 for the next hour. And incidentally, if you don't have a shortwave, why, we do carry an excellent Sanzian shortwave that should be able to pick up our evening program, at least the second hour of that. But this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And this is how we're able to be on the air 5 hours every day as we reach out across America with the news behind the news, the story behind the story. So we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And, of course, that you'll go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com, where you can listen to our programs 5 hours a day, either on the Radio Liberty Network or on the Genesis Network or on the American Freedom Network. So, and then, of course, you can hear our programs, as I mentioned earlier, on shortwave. You can pull down our newsletters off our website. And we have newsletters going back to the mid-1990s, and there's a lot of good information there. We hope that you'll copy those newsletters and that you'll circulate them among your friends. The one on democracies and republics, the ones how they create new diseases, on genetic engineering, on the war in Iraq. Our latest one, the May-June issue of our newsletter, was Who Was Osama Bin Laden? Who was he really? Why was it that although the president ordered the CIA to kill or capture Osama bin Laden, but to murder him if necessary, with presidential permission, why the CIA refused to do it? That just doesn't make sense when the wicked Osama bin Laden had been plotting against America going back at least to 1992. So why then did the CIA, with opportunity after opportunity after opportunity, satellites, you can see everybody on Earth, even see the type of newspaper they're reading with the predator planes, you could actually spot him on the ground repeatedly. Why is it the CIA refused to take out and remove this scourge, this man who plotted the 9-1-1 attack? Well, there are many things that people don't understand. At least we'll ask a lot of excellent questions. If you'd like a free copy of our May-June newsletter, and that covers 2 months. It's a little longer than usual, but we needed to get caught up. We'll be glad to send you a free copy of the newsletter. Just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We have a excellent video. It's called Iraq, The Untold Story. And you can get it by itself or with a syllabus, a very excellent syllabus that will give you all the documents you need to understand all of the wars of the last century, from starting with the Boer War and then the Spanish-American War, and then, of course, right up to the war with Iraq today. We'll give you the websites. We'll give you much of the documentation, all the documentation you need to realize that all the wars have been contrived, and there really is an evil force out there that wants as many people to die as possible. In fact, you'll even have a copy of the article out of the Chicago Tribune in June of 1945, talking about when they signed the truce, a treaty of surrender at the harbor of Tokyo, and of course it points out the Japanese had been trying to surrender for 6 months and we wouldn't let them, and the invasion of Okinawa and Iwo Jima and the dropping of the bomb were totally unnecessary. There really is an evil force that wants as many people to die and claim as many souls as possible. And that is the spiritual battle we're up against. So remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. The video, the syllabus, Iraq, The Untold Story. And then we ask you to pray for America, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow, Monday, I guess now, at the same time, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. You know, I was an orthopedic surgeon for many years, and there's sort of a camaraderie among orthopedic surgeons. I was born in 1929, and 10 years before I was born, a orthopedic surgeon named Lieutenant Colonel John McRae died in France. He was a Canadian orthopedist who had left the security of his home to go overseas to fight in the First World War. And he penned these words when shortly before he died. In Flanders field the poppies blow, between the crosses row on row that mark our place, and in the sky the larks still bravely singing fly, still scarce heard amidst the guns below. We are the dead. Scarce days ago we lived, felt dawn, saw sunset glow, loved and were loved, and now we lie in Flanders fields. Take up our quarrel with a foe. To you from failing hands we throw. The torch be yours to hold it high. If ye break faith with us who die, we shall not sleep, though poppies grow in Flanders fields. And that poem, of course, caught the imagination of the American people, and for 50 years it was often read at meetings, it was taught in our schools. Grown men cried when they heard those words. But there was part of that that most people really don't understand. When he talks about take up our quarrel with the foe, to you from failing hands we throw, the torch be yours to hold it high. Who was the foe in the First World War? Was it the German Kaiser? You read the memoirs of the German Kaiser. He never understood how the war came about. He thought it was a secret Masonic conspiracy, or it was an English conspiracy headed by a man named Sir Edward Grey. Was it the emperor of the Austria-Hungary? Who really was the foe in the First World War? And what you must understand, and you will understand if you read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, is all of the wars have been fought for the same reason, never against the foe that most people thought they were fighting for. Americans were drawn into the First World War with the propaganda from the controlled media, because even back in 1915 and 1916 and 1917, the media was already bought up and purchased and being used to control our reality. And if you doubt that, you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We'll send you a copy of the Congressional Record, February of 1917, a speech by Congressman Oscar Calloway talking about how the media had already been brought up by J.P. Morgan and their friends in the munitions industry to control the reality of the American people, and they kept telling these stories about the little Belgian boys who had their hands cut off, and how the wicked Huns were cutting off the breasts of the Belgian women and raping and ravishing them. And by repeating these terror and horror stories over and over again, you eventually were able to get the American people to be willing to go to war, and many young men to volunteer for the American Expeditionary Force to go over to Europe to fight those bloody Huns, those evil Huns. And of course, when they got to Belgium, there weren't any little boys with their hands cut off, and there weren't any women with their breasts cut off. It had all been a lie. But that's how you get men to go to war. You inflame their passions, and just exactly as we're inflaming the passions of the American people with the stories of people being beheaded over there, Americans being beheaded, and the only trouble is, when was the last time you heard about how Al-Qaeda, which, of course, beheaded Mr. Berg, was carrying American-issue orange jumpsuits, the kind they have at Guantanamo? I wonder how many Al-Qaeda cells have orange jumpsuits to put their American prisoners in. And then, of course, the video that we saw of Mr. Berg, there was just no blood. Now, if you behead people, there's going to be blood every place. Every day, every week at Chop Chop Square in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia, they behead dozens of people, chop off their hands and their feet. We never see this on television because they don't want to inflame us against the Saudi Arabians. But, of course, the effort is to inflame us against the Arabs and, of course, the wicked terrorists. And then, of course, we show the videos and the pictures of Abu Ghraib prison to inflame the Arabs against us. And that's how you get a war going. And when you understand that, it all begins to make sense. Otherwise, very little going on makes sense. Well, our guest this evening is David. It's pronounce your last name again, David. I want to say Tadashini, but that's not right.
That's close. That's good enough.
That's good enough.
I've never heard anybody say it.
All right. Anyway, David, of course, was over in Vietnam, and he lived through the horror of Vietnam. And we're trying to point out, if you don't understand Vietnam, you can't understand what's going on in Iraq today. Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it, said George Santayana, and those words are as true today as they were when he wrote them. So, now, of course, you were talking about some of the other parts of Phoenix that you were much more aware of, the psychological parts of Operation Phoenix, which was a CIA operation that killed large numbers of civilians in Vietnam because they opposed America's occupation of their country, and they looked upon the French as occupiers, and they got rid of the French, and now the Americans had moved in, and these people just didn't want to have another country occupying them. They weren't necessarily Viet Cong, but they opposed our policy, and so they were, of course, systematically exterminated. About how many people were killed in Operation Phoenix? Do you have any idea?
I have no idea, Dr. Stan. That's beyond my purview of knowledge.
There is a book called Operation Phoenix, and they say about 40,000. Some people say 20,000. Bo Greitz, I think, said 60,000. It's probably somewhere between 20 and 60,000 people who were systematically assassinated by the CIA. How would you keep that from the American people? Why, very simply, you control what they read, see, and hear. You can go up on the Internet and look up Operation Phoenix and get articles, or we can give references to books on it, but you're not going to hear this ordinarily because this is not accepted for the American people to realize that our people would do things like this, but in war, good people will do terrible things. Let's talk about the psychological aspects of Phoenix.
Well, a lot of people, Dr. Stan, don't believe that a person can be controlled. They don't believe in mind control. And that is a very, very real thing. And what did I heard you mention it on a couple of occasions when you were talking to another gentleman a few weeks ago when you were talking about mind control. The technology is called pain drug hypnosis. And what most psychologists, anybody who studies psychology knows that there's a subconscious mind. But what most people don't realize is that this subconscious mind is not something that thinks the way you and I, thinking right now, having this discussion. It's more properly called a reactive mind. And what that reactive mind does is it reacts unwittingly, without the volition of the person, to stimulus in the environment. And the best example of that I can think of is what psychology calls post-traumatic stress disorder. And supposedly you're in a combat situation and you're in a ditch, you smell the gunpowder, you smell the napalm burning, you hear the rifles in the distance, you hear the planes, the bomb is blowing up, you hear the babies crying in the village, and all of these things impact on your mind. Well, when you're under trauma, Your analytical mind, the part of the mind that you think with, it's shut down to a degree. And to that degree that your analytical mind is shut down, your reactive mind opens up. And it stores these things called mental image pictures. And they're pictures of every sense that you have, even the conclusions you come to. And by controlling a person's environment and exposing him to pain and drugs, they can literally make you act on cue for no reason. You won't even know why you're doing it. It's a tested science. It's called in the circles that I'm familiar with, it's called black Dianetics.
Well, is this sort of like a Manchurian candidate?
Yeah, and it's absolutely It's not science fiction. It's not pie in the sky. You know, it's something that somebody made up on Deep Space Nine or something. It actually works. You can if you know what you're doing. These people can actually control someone on cue. It's scary. It really is scary. And this is the way they train those people who crash the planes into the Trade Center. It's pain drug hypnosis. They're not thinking with their rational mind. They're reacting to things that people say to them. They're reacting to their environment. They have no conscious control over their actions. They just react. This thing can take over your entire conscious awareness. It could make you use your conscious mind to whatever end they program you to use it to. It's not science fiction, Dr. Stan. I can tell you from firsthand experience. It's not something that somebody made up.
Well, now, of course, we know that they have developed these techniques. As far as the people who crashed the planes into the World Trade Center, though, and the Pentagon, don't you think that a lot of this was simply this fanatic Islam, this fanatic Islamic belief that they have, that they want to die for all, and once you die for all, this is the one way you have getting into heaven? Would that necessarily be this pain drug programming? Or would this be the exploitation of these rather fanatic beliefs, unrealistic beliefs on the part of the people who have embraced the fundamentals of the Muslim faith, going back to the time of Muhammad?
Well, it's brainwashing, and it's a known fact that the CIA printed up doctored Qurans for down in Quantico, Virginia, and then sent them over to Afghanistan during the Cold War, during the Jimmy Carter years.
You're talking about during the Afghan War there in 1980, when they were actually promoting this whole radical Islamic movement, which really didn't exist until then?
Right, and what they were supposed to do is that the CIA trained these guys to go up into Russia to do what they did to us. And then since Russia wasn't there anymore, now it's, now they had these people with an agenda and nowhere, they had all of this pent-up brainwashing, so to speak, and all of this pent-up anger, and it's false anger. It's implanted. It's embedded, artificially, and it had nowhere to go.
And, Chris, we also printed USAID and printed $51 million worth of textbooks to implant these ideas in the minds of the youth of Afghanistan and Pakistan. Anybody who doubts that, we'll be glad to send them a copy of an article out of the Washington Post going into that. $51 million if your money went into brainwashing children in this radical form of Islam where it is wonderful to die killing the infidels. The only trouble is, we're the infidels now. And that is an article in the Washington Post entitled "The ABCs of Jihad: The Programs Designed by American Psychologists to Create This Radical Islamic Movement, This Radical Terrorist Movement That Today Threatens the World." If you'd like to verify what I'm saying, the article, give us a call 1-800-544-8927. Ask for the ABCs of Jihad, because if what I'm saying is true, then you better be concerned. If what I'm saying isn't true, I won't be able to provide the article. Isn't it that simple? So go ahead, David, I think it's so important people understand that these techniques are available by which they can, by one or another means, they can make people do totally irrational things.
That's correct, and they can make the American people believe anything they want to make them believe. It's like I said, people will believe a lie. Hitler even said it himself. He says people are likely to believe a big lie too than a small lie. So if you make it the more audacious you can make it, the more incredible you can make it, the more likely it is that people will believe it, because it's more believable than the truth. And a good example is the JFK assassination, because when they caught Lee Harvey Oswald and said he was a suspect, and they linked him, and they said, well, here's the rifle and here's the bullet, 90% of the people believed him. And it's not that you have to fool everybody. All you have to do is fool, a few people. It's not something that you need to have total control over. All you have to do is fool the majority of the people, and the rest of them will follow suit. It's not anything. It's not complicated. It really isn't complicated, and they do it every day It's nothing new, and the people believe this. And then, and the thing is that it's a psychological thing called dissonance. Dissonance is a state of mind where you're looking to solve a problem. You have two things in your mind that are opposed to each other, and somehow you have to solve it. And it's the way you do it is to accept the least, the most probable definition. And George W. Bush said, and I quote, "You can fool some of the people all of the time, and those are the ones you need to concentrate on."
I don't know that he actually said that, did he?
He did, and I can give you the reference in a minute. I have it right in front of me. He did say that, and
now where did he say that? You're going to have to
have to give you a reference. The source was the Gannett News Service, USA Today, August 14th, 2003. The article by James Bovard.
Well, of course, James Bovard's pretty reliable as an individual. You have to know who your people are. But Bovard's a very well-known writer. Well, you make a copy of that and get it off to me, will you please, David? I'd love to see that. And incidentally, we carry James Bovard's The Body of Secrets, which has fascinating information in it. So, you know, I would, if he said that, why, I would give it some credence. He certainly goes into Operation Northwood. If you haven't read James Bovard's book, Body of Secrets, let me suggest you get that. You're not going to find it at your local bookstore, but it is available through Radio Liberty. So pick up the story there, David.
Okay, well, basically, Dr. Stan, it's all a matter of emotions. It's emotions before intellect, and a lot of people are guilty of doing that. I'm guilty of it myself, and I've spent the better part of 2 years writing this book on Vietnam and dumping my emotions onto paper because there was little else I could do with it. And I would like to share a little bit of it with you so that you know where the emotions come from. Book has got about 10 sections in it, and each section has a little poem that goes to it that kind of summarizes what it says. And since it is the 4th of July weekend, Dr. Stan, with your permission, I'd like to dedicate this to the men and women over in Iraq who are serving, who are defending this country against its enemies. This is called Reflections. I wrote this poem about 4 years ago. In the days of my youth long past, with my hand over my heart, and with the innocence of tender years, I pledged allegiance and played the part. A few more years of those days went by, and as I listened to the news, I learned of a place called Vietnam and that young men went there to die. Later on, as I grew older and more a man for those 18 years, I went to fight for freedom's calling in the land of childhood's fears. But in the middle of that long battle, I found the war could not be won. So I turned the ramparts inward and sang the songs of peace and love. And as much as I tried to fight it, and as badly as I longed to win, the drugs of Southeast Asia had caused the best of us to sin. And of course there were the children who by destiny were born in this land of misty beauty that the war was torn. If it wasn't for the killing fields and the airstrike that went wrong, I would not have felt the pangs of guilt and wouldn't do what I had done. And the memories of my youth long past, the sweet kisses I used to steal, mixed with napalm bombs and love's sweet charms, and now I don't know what to feel. The most tragic sight of a soldier's sorrow was shiny boxes loaded on the plane, C-130s full of death's grim cargo, taking home those who died in vain. Amid the bullets, bombs, and battles, among the flowers and the stars, children frolicked in the rain-stroked streets, sold their bodies in the Saigon bars. And amid this tragic sorrow, there was a day beyond compare. A sweet little angel stole my heart and wiped the chocolate in her hair. My beloved country made me angry, and Vietnam had made me sad. The homeland I was defending had turned its back on me and Dad. I tried to be a Christian first, an American most of all, but my country had eaten Eden's apple and was destined for the fall. Many of us had burned their draft cards. Our civil rights, there were but few. We sang of peace and love and played rock and roll. There was little else that we could do.
Well, hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and David, I can just see the intensity of your feeling, you know, going over there, realizing we weren't there to win the war, seeing all these terrible things happening and wondering why. And I think that so many people came back from Vietnam never quite understanding what it was all about. Some of them thought, well, it was all about profits. It was about profits, or it was about fighting communism, and we failed, or it was the munitions manufacturers, and people never really understood the real purpose of Vietnam. And of course, we've discussed that earlier, and simply quoting from the man who was instrumental in getting us there, McGeorge Bundy. Member of Skull and Bones, member of the Council on Foreign Relations. If you haven't read the January 1967 issue of Foreign Affairs magazine, get it, read the lead article. It's called The End of Either Or. Either guns or butter is what they talked about. You can't have full support for the war and all these goody things at home. Well, of course, he was saying we can, and we did. We did it by stealing from Social Security. We did from stealing from future generations, by running up a national debt, by destroying the value of our currency. And, of course, that's even being compounded more today. Well, David, are there other poems you'd like to read from your book?
Well, I'd just like to just finish this one that just got a couple more verses.
Okay, go ahead.
And when the 10th state protest gathered, the National Guard was called out too, and the bullets that killed the four of them were also aimed at me and you. The entire country mourned the lives of the students who had died in Vietnam and on Kent's front lawn with the tears their mothers cried. The whole country rose to anger, and the anger turned to rage when the news of the My Lai massacre made the New York Times front page. With little hope of negotiation and a purpose quite unknown, we had fought 10 years and cried the tears and came home in disgrace alone. And it took another decade still for the country to hear their call, to respect the dead and make amends and put their names up on the wall. But the war there has long since ended, but some of us are suffering still. I remember in my dreams the silent screams, and I guess I always will. And I pray the world has learned a lesson by the pain and the lives we lost, that war ain't worth the trouble and the untold human cost. And America could be reminded on that one special Veterans Day of the price we paid for freedom and for those of us to pray. Dr. Stan, it's been a pleasure to talk to you, because I think you understand better than anyone I've ever talked to about the issues that goes on in our country.
Well, I think, I've taken care of so many of the veterans that came back from the Vietnam. I was, of course, beyond the age to be drafted. I'd have been drafted during the Korean War and served my time in Europe. But I, of course, took care of many of the shattered men who came back. Not that their bones were shattered, but their minds were shattered. And they had all sorts of aches and pains, and they were all related to muscle tension. They were related to emotion for the things that they'd done. And, these have been good people when they went over there. And, of course, war does terrible things to minds. And what the average individual doesn't understand is that many of the boys who are going to come home from Iraq will never be the same again. They may not have been wounded physically, but they'll be wounded emotionally and mentally. And that will be with them for the rest of their lives, because war is truly hell. And I think that David's poem brings that out so vividly. We'll be back in just a moment as our stations join us once again here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening is David Totticini, and we're talking about his experiences in Vietnam, and he's been writing a book for 2.5 years, and writing a book really in many ways is very therapeutic, isn't it, David?
Yes, it is. It helps you unburden and makes and put context into what happened, because sometimes Dr. Stan, we most of the people that were over there that I knew were always stoned on drugs, myself included. I stayed away from the hard stuff, but I was smoking that tie stick stuff. And when you're smoking tie stick, you don't feel any pain, emotional, physical, or otherwise.
Now, what is tie stick? What sort of a drug is that?
Tie stick is, if you've ever been over there, the marijuana leaves grow horrendous, and what they do is they take the individual leaves and they soak them, they marinate them in liquid opium, for a couple of days, and then they take the leaf and they wind that around a very small bamboo twig and hang it in the sun to dry. And when it dries, it looks like a cinnamon stick, a real tightly rolled cinnamon stick. You take two hits of this, and that's all she wrote. You can't smoke the whole thing. You kill yourself. And it just makes you feel good. It makes you, it's the illegal, Viagra, but what do you call that stuff there, that psychological stuff that they give people for?
LSD or opium or crack or?
It's like a very powerful marijuana.
Okay.
You get mellow, you don't want any trouble, you just want to hang out and eat pizza and Doritos and drink Coke. But, that's how most of us, escaped the incredible, mental torture. So, you can't go for so many days and see people dying, especially little kids. I had a little 8-year-old boy die in my arms, and that really, I can say, Dr. Stanard, that wrecked my life. That I could never sleep. I was a workaholic. I'd stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning, until I exhausted myself, until I could fall asleep. And I thought that that was normal because I had been doing this practically all of my life until I found out that this was post-traumatic stress. And post-traumatic stress is a very real thing. It could literally destroy your life. And that's what a lot of people in the United States, with 9/11, especially the people who were close, are hit with post-traumatic stress. They're psychologically damaged unless they can put some context to what happened.
Well, of course, the thing is that what happened on 9/11 happened in one day. And, of course, that's the memories of that. But as the men who go into battle, this is day after day after day,
right.
Week after week, month after month. And it wears, it destroys, it erodes, it destroys your conscience. And, if you're concerned about it's a matter of kill or be killed. And you're going to kill the other people. You're going to be just as wicked and nasty and evil as they are because they're going to kill you and you're going to kill them. And what a terrible situation it is when men turn their back on their moral principles and in a matter of surviving because evil is the enemy. And yet, this is the only way to survive, and I'm sure the drugs made it tolerable.
Well, thank God, Dr. Stanard, I wasn't a combat soldier. I couldn't say that I really could have handled it. But I was out on the MedCap missions. We tried to help the civilians. We brought the medical aid. And we were even stuck with a moral dilemma there, because if the VC were to observe a village taking aid from the Americans, they wait till the Americans leave, and then they go in and they bomb the village. And there was one incident that happened 2 years before I got there. The MedCaps went in and inoculated the children for I think it was the little shots you get in your arm with the little tiny, I forget what they call that, but when the Americans left, the VC came in, and everyone who had a needle mark on his arm got his arm chopped off. They had about 70, 80 kids with their arms chopped off, all dead in the middle of the village, and that's what you get for taking aid from the Americans.
And of course, so this same thing is going over in Iraq. I think in Fallujah, why the Iraqis who helped the Americans, they just killed them. Because war brings out hatred and it brings out the worst, most inhumane things for people. And the Iraqis, of course, who've been working with the Americans now that the country's been returned to Iraqi control, these people will be marked, I'm sure. And, of course, the new puppet government there will try to protect the people who work with the Americans, but it's going to be a bad situation all the way around. And the hatreds that we've engendered there, it'll take decades to undo. And this is nothing new. It's the same thing happened when the British moved in and took over Iraq back in 1917, 1918, 1919. And first controlled it then until the 1930s and then turned it loose. And then, of course, it's just been chaos. The same thing is true in Afghanistan. These terrible war-torn countries where people don't even know hardly the meaning of the word peace and safety. We'll be back in just a moment here with our special guest this evening, and welcome your calls at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is David Todesini. And if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question, a comment, if you agree or disagree, we'd love to hear from you. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And yes, there are things that are worth fighting for and worth dying for. But worth fighting for is not going halfway around the world to fight for freedom and impose our will on and our values on another country that is headed by a wicked man named Saddam Hussein, who had been kept in power by the Central Intelligence Agency and by our government. And anybody who doubts that, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We'll show you how the government had actually helped Saddam Hussein all during the 1980s, lent him billions of dollars, and then, of course, you need to read Robert Baer's book, The See No Evil. He was a CIA agent in Iraq in 1995, and he will tell you how the CIA blocked efforts by the Iraqi military to overthrow Saddam Hussein. So, in fact, he said every Iraqi he knew believed Saddam Hussein had worked for the CIA, and many believed he still worked for the United States government. That's what he said. And so you need to understand that what we're getting is really not true at all. It's almost as if somebody has written a massive script, and, of course, it's all being enacted now, drawing us into war. We've got Dale calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Dale. Did you have a question or comment?
First, I have a comment and then a question for the guest. But the comment is, as far as Saddam Hussein goes, it appears that with the way the abductors operate in these particular situations, where they seize people and they have them tucked away somewhere for a period of time, it wouldn't surprise me if they ran Saddam Hussein through some kind of mind control or memory erasing techniques. I do have a question for the guest. Is what do you see in, at least in future tense, beyond Iraq, that could possibly be a similar situation as what had happened in Vietnam and what is going on in Iraq? I'm speaking about other countries. And I'll take your answer on the air. Thank you.
And I think Dale is asking, is there going to be other countries that we are going to be involved in war with, perhaps over in the Middle East? Do you foresee anything of that sort, David?
Well, I was a little scared a little bit when they started messing around over in Korea, because I
hold that thought here for just a moment. We've got to bring our other stations on. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is David Todesini. His website will be up in a couple of weeks, www.telsonusa. That's TelsonUSA.com. And, of course, if you'd like to give us a call, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. We've been talking about Vietnam. We've been talking about Operation Phoenix. We are, of course, touching on what's going on in Iraq today. And we just had a caller who asked David what he foresaw as far as the future. And David was beginning to say that he was concerned about the situation over in Korea. Do you want to pick up the story there, David?
Yeah, I was very nervous when they started to antagonize Korea, because Korea is not a country you want to play with, especially North Korea. I dealt with the Korean people, the Korean military, when I was over in Vietnam. They are, and I say this respectfully, they are what the Vietnamese would call Dinh Ga Dao, which means a little bit punched in the head. They're very gung-ho, not a society or a mindset you want to play with. They do not fool around. They're not diplomats. They'll believe me. They do not want to get into Korea, and that's going to be, you know, you can't fight it. You can hardly fight this war on one front. You know, they've got. When I went to post office a couple of days ago, and they have 34th Street and Penn Station locked down. Like it was some kind of a military base or something, and they've got people with M16s and they got dogs running around sniffing things, and you know, I went up to one of these guys. I was wearing my my veteran's ID, and I, I'm a veteran. And I said, I went up to the man and I shook his hand, and he had a nice little young lady with him, and I said, thank you for serving, and thank you for your service to my country. As you can see, I'm a veteran. And we got to talking, and then he says, what are you guys doing? He says, we're looking out for terrorists.
Now, where was this, in what city?
34th Street, New York City.
New York City, so they're on maximum alert for terrorism in New York at the present time?
Yeah, well, they have this insane plan to have the Republican National Convention in of all places, Madison Square Garden. You've got so many ways in and out of that place that it's impossible. I don't care how many people you put in there. It's impossible. This is a nightmare to control. They're going to close, I think, 6 of the 8 exits out of the train station. They're going to have 60,000 people go through 2 exits every day. It's a bottleneck to begin with 8 exits. It's going to be incredible trying to get out of 2 exits. And they're going to lock this whole, the whole area down.
And this is preparation for the Republican National Convention in September.
I think what they're doing is they're trying to bait another terrorist attack. They have it in the most vulnerable place you could possibly think of, because there's so many ways, so many places to hide, so many ways in and out of there, so many places where you could stand in one of those buildings and camp out for 3 months and nobody would ever know you're there. And how do you know what a terrorist looks like or what he's going to do? And I said to the fine gentleman, the soldier that was standing there, I says, what are you going to do if there's a terrorist attack? And he looked at me. And, say, for example, somebody has got a vial of anthrax or botulism or whatever you want to, those germs that they're inventing, and just walks up one, out of the clear blue sky and just drops it on the floor. What are you going to do? And he looked at me. And I says, I'll tell you what you're going to do. You're going to die like the rest of us. There's no way that you're going to, that insanity, no way that you're going to control that area, and that there's absolutely no way.
Well, I'll tell you what, of course, they're planning on this, David, and I think you have to know that we are expanding the vaccination of all of our troops for both anthrax and smallpox, and since there's so many different types of smallpox, and the vaccine would not be good for every type, the only reason you would vaccinate all of your own troops, if you knew exactly what brand or what the type of anthrax was going to be used. In other words, if you were planning on using it yourself, or you knew the people who were going to use it and what type they were going to use, I will tell you, I'm very concerned. I was supposed to go to a meeting in New York immediately preceding the Republican National Convention, and I'm not going to go, especially when I know that they're inoculating all of our troops for anthrax, and they have to know what type is going to be used. So I think we are going to have more attacks, but my fear is that they knew exactly what was going to happen on September 11th. How could I even say that? Well, I'm reading line for line the staff report of the 9/11 Commission. Do you know that the FBI was watching Muhammad Atta months before that? They have pictures of him going to an ATM machine. Now, how would they have pictures of Muhammad Atta going to an ATM machine months before the 9/11 attack, unless they were watching Muhammad Atta months before the 9/11 attack? They know everything he did in Germany. In fact, they were watching him over there before he came to the United States in Germany. Why would they then stop watching him when he came to the United States? He took repeated trips back and forth from the United States to Europe. In fact, there are all sorts of strange things about this whole scenario. You can see the hands of the intelligence agencies. It appears there were two Muhammad Attas. One was meeting with an Iraqi intelligence agent in Czechoslovakia at the same time while he was making telephone calls here on his phone here in the United States. But they do have pictures of him at an ATM machine months before this man. We had no idea who he was, but the FBI has pictures of him. Isn't that interesting? So there's so much of the story the American people haven't been told. But, David, I want to get back to what you were talking about earlier, and that was the Operation Phoenix and their mind control experiments. Who were they using these mind control experiments on?
They were using the mind control experiments primarily on U.S. soldiers without their knowledge. And you don't have to. A lot of people when they hear mind control, they hear that phrase mind control experiments. They get a picture in their mind of a laboratory and sparks flying like some kind of a Frankenstein movie or something. And it's not that way. It's a very subtle thing. You don't even know it's being done. It's a selective feeding of information. It's a selective conditioning with controlling your environment. It can be putting drugs in your food that you don't know about and creating a drug state where your mind is susceptible to suggestion. There's a number of different techniques, and none of them are really macabre as a laboratory where they strap you down to a table and hook your head up with wires. It's not that way, and the techniques work. They absolutely, totally work. And what they're doing right now to the American people with this 9/11 thing, it's psychological warfare. What they do is they hit you once, they hit the World Trade Center, the thing collapses, it's trauma. Then the politicians get up there and say, oh, this business as usual, go back to what you're doing, just make money, don't worry about it, we got everything under control. And then when everybody starts to feel comfortable again and they start to feel confident in their government's ability to have everything under control, then they hit you with another something that's even more worse than before. And then that causes you to lose all confidence. That will cause the American people, if another terrorist attack would happen, worse than 9/11, which I think is in the offing in New York City. I really believe that. Because I'm right there. I'm right here in New York City. And I have a strange feeling, and I even had a strange feeling when they killed Timothy McVeigh, the way he went out. You know, usually it takes 15, 20 years for a guy on death row. They knocked this guy off right away. He must have known something.
Oh, well, I'll tell you what, there was a fellow had a talk show out of Texas, and he was a very interesting individual, and somebody sent me a copy of a program he aired shortly after Timothy McVeigh was executed. And it was an interview with a woman who had actually been there and witnessed the execution. Her remark was, "I didn't know that you kept breathing after you were dead." And then he would play this clip over and over again for his listening audience on shortwave. "I didn't know that you kept breathing after you were dead." And then he'd say, "And the body was immediately taken out and not autopsied, just disappeared and nobody knows where it is." Is Timothy McVeigh really still breathing like he was after he was executed? Well, it wasn't very long after. The talk show host actually played that thing. Actually, I don't know how many of you ever read his book. It was called Ride a Pale Horse. And his name actually escapes me momentarily. I guess it's a senior moment. But he was a very well-known conservative talk show host. And about a few weeks after that, a SWAT team came out and killed him. Killed the talk show host. Do those things happen in America? Well, they said yes. He had flipped out. He was threatening people with a gun. The SWAT team went in and he killed one of the officers, so they had to shoot him dead. And maybe that's what happened. I don't know what happened, but I do know that he's very dead. And of course, he was the one who really seriously questioned what happened to Timothy McVeigh, because of course what most people don't know is how Stephen Jones, the defense attorney for Timothy McVeigh, opened his defense in Colorado when he said Timothy McVeigh had written to his sister Jennifer and said, "I am a member of a secret special forces team involved in criminal activity." And of course the prosecutor didn't mention it, the media totally blacked that out. Timothy McVeigh insisted that he was guilty, kept telling his attorney that. If you've read the book that he supposedly dictated, it was as phony as a $3 bill. You've never seen anything as ridiculous as that. Supposedly he's driving through the streets of Dallas on the way to the Murrah building and with two fuses to this massive bomb there that's going to blow up. One is a 5-minute fuse, so he lights it 5 minutes away. The other is a 1-minute fuse. He lights this fuse 1 minute away at a stoplight. He doesn't even know if there's going to be a parking place in front of the building. He doesn't know there might be a traffic jam ahead of him, and he's got both of those fuses lit. You don't set off a bomb like that. With fuses, you set it off electronically. He wrote that book, I think, as a means of telling us, if you believe anything you're being told, it's all a lie. But anyway, that we're getting way off the subject. But you're absolutely right. There is mind control. They're playing games with the minds of the American people. And most people have no grasp at all of what's going on. They're frightening us to death. Why, my goodness, we have a real danger. In fact, John Ashcroft announced about 2 weeks ago there was a real danger of an attack. course, we don't know where it's going to be, and we don't know if it's going to happen, but there's a real danger. He didn't even tell Tom Ridge about that. Tom Ridge, who's supposedly monitoring all the attacks, and, of course, the Office of Homeland Security didn't even raise the alert, and yet John Ashcroft, the Attorney General, went on the national television, national radio, to scare the American people to death. Why would he do something like that when even Tom Ridge, who's in charge of monitoring terrorism, didn't even know there was a threat?
Well, I think they knew there was a threat. It's a matter of, we knew that the planes were coming when they attacked Pearl Harbor. I have to sit here and I have to rest in the sufficiency of evidence when I look at all of this stuff, because you look at the big picture and you have our own government working against us. It's like our own government wants to obliterate the United States of America.
I have that same feeling at times. Say, we've got Tim calling in from Indianapolis. So let's, Tim, do you have a question or comment?
Yes, I wanted to make a couple of comments and then a question. Dr. Stan, you mentioned earlier the millions of people who died in Vietnam. We need to start referring that to the Vietnamese Holocaust and the Iraqi Holocaust. If we are real men and have any compassion. But Dave, the question I have, whenever there's drugs around, the CIA will be there. Now, can you tell me about the Golden Triangle? You haven't mentioned this area. Isn't that an area close to Vietnam, just rich in heroin and opium? Thank you.
Yeah, that area is known for its drugs, and the Golden Triangle is practically, I would consider it, Laos, Cambodia, and Vietnam, especially South Vietnam, where the weather is conducive to growing all kinds of drugs, especially marijuana plants, which grow like 25, 30 feet tall. That area is the breadbasket of the world as far as drugs are concerned, and the CIA, as far as I know, has never left that place. It's a gold mine, and the only thing that the CIA lost when the war ended was a way to get the drugs back, and you know, if you look at the American society today, and you do all of, and you add up all the numbers, you can get crack cocaine almost anywhere in this country. If I don't even know how to do the math, but it's got to be hundreds of tons a day, and this is coming over our borders. It's not materializing out of heaven like manna from heaven. It's coming somewhere, coming into the United States, or it has been here. Either one, it's either here or it's coming in here. And we have a government that proposes that they're going to interdict nuclear weapons and biological weapons, which could be just a test tube, and they can't stop the drugs from coming in. So it's either that they can't stop it or they won't stop it. Why won't they stop it? Because they're involved with it. And if they could stop the drugs, they could stop the terrorism. I mean, I have no confidence at all that they could stop a terrorist bomb from coming in, because you have these suitcase nukes, about 85 of them are missing from the Soviet inventory. They're about as big as two Samsonite suitcases put together. They weigh about 400 pounds. You know, that's quite a bit of baggage, but, you know, if you're looking at 100 tons of drug shipments and they're getting in, you know, a suitcase could make it by customs. So, you know, what would it take to make a disaster in the United States?
Okay. Let's go to, we've got Bill calling in Santa Cruz. Hi, Bill. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I know that both of you can appreciate that understanding all these things is a long process, and eventually you get enough pieces of the puzzle together to realize what's truth and what fits and what doesn't. And eventually you get the whole picture or a good part of it, and I think most Americans aren't up to speed on even Pearl Harbor, like your guest mentioned. But I feel like I reached the top of the pyramid or nearby the top after reading a couple of books, one being Vatican Assassins, and I think there's a lot of relevant information in there. I don't agree with everything the author says, but historically, you can sense and know, if you have done your study, which pieces fit and which are true. And another really great little book is by an author named F. Tupper Saucy, and it's called Rulers of Evil. And I think both of those books are really necessary for people who have at least done the study and have had the interest enough to go out and do something other than sit around and watch CBS News and such. And I wanted to thank you for your program tonight.
All right, thanks so much, Bill. And let's go to Karen calling in from Monterey. It's amazing as we get to the end of the program why everybody's calling. Karen is good to hear from you. How are you tonight?
Fine, thanks. How about yourself?
Doing fine.
Great. Well, first of all, I'd like to mention the name of that author, Bill Cooper.
Bill Cooper, of course. I apologize for not being able to get it. I usually get it about 15 minutes after we mention it, but ride a pale horse, but Bill Cooper is absolutely right. And he was shot shortly after the death of Timothy McVeigh, or at least after the, he was supposed to have died.
Behold a Pale Horse is the name of the book.
Right.
I'd also like to mention another book called The Phoenix Program by Douglas Valentine, who states that the purpose of Phoenix sought to accomplish through capture, intimidation, elimination, and assassination what the U.S. was unable to accomplish through the use of military power. And I'd also like to ask your guest about how Phoenix tactics are being used in the United States today on American civilians.
All right. Do you want to comment on that? I think he sort of touched on that. The question, David, is how are the Phoenix techniques of mind control? Is it mind control, or you're thinking of the more violent aspects of that, Karen?
Silencing dissent.
Silence dissent. All right. How are the Phoenix techniques of silencing dissent being used in America today?
Well, basically, it's controlling the media. And they don't even know they're being controlled because they're selectively fed information to lead them to, to believe something. See, Dr. Stan, it's very easy to argue with someone when you have a difference of opinion. But if you come to your own conclusion, it's hard to argue with yourself. So the Phoenix Mind Control Program, basically steers you by the selective introduction of information and disinformation to lead you to make the wrong conclusions with the right data. I mean, they leave data out. That, it's like a court of law when they have exculpatory evidence. Oh, we don't, if nobody asks for it, then we won't give it to you. It's called a Brady Rosario violation in New York. But see, once you add the piece of data, it changes the whole context of something. If you take that data out and you leave it out, and you just, you just leave the information there, that what can people come to the conclusion with this data? If people, the technology is figuring out what conclusion people would come to with what data, and then selectively feeding them this data. And then people would sit there and say, well, I have this information, so this must be true. But they don't have this other piece of information that would change the whole topic. That's mind control. It's selective mind control. It's not something that, you're going to stick a needle in somebody's brain and inject them with drugs and wave a little watch in front of them and make them watch this little squirrely thing. And, it's not that type of mind control. It's a very scientific methodology. It's tried, tested. It works. It absolutely works. And it's in my circle of study, it's called Black Dianetics. And it's the absolute obverse of the field of Dianetics or Scientology, which is a healing practice. But they take this and they turn it and they flip it around and they use it to control information. They use it to control people. It absolutely works.
Okay, fine. Karen, does that answer your question?
Yes, and also I'd like to add that it's a method of getting people to think that they arrived at their own conclusion and that these thoughts are their own thoughts.
And I think that's really so true. We're going to have Dr. Joe Douglas on here, I think, in the next couple of weeks, and we'll try to have him on for 2 hours. He's one of the experts on these various techniques of using drugs, to control minds and reactions and emotions. I just heard him speak this last weekend, the most amazing presentation I've heard in a long time, and much of this is covered in his book, Betrayed, but we're going to have him on for 2 hours, and I hope you'll be listening that evening, Karen.
Yes, I will be. Thank you very much.
Good night. God bless. Well, David, we've, of course, been going off sort of a marathon, but you were very easy to talk to. You've got a great value, a great deal of knowledge, and I think we probably could go on for another couple of hours, but we're going to have to wrap this up because the computer isn't going to let us go on. What thoughts would you like to leave with our listeners tonight? We lost David. Can we get David back again on the line? I think we must have pushed the wrong button. So I'm going to ask our producer to get David back on and let him wrap up. But this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And if you are out there in the listening audience, we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours every day. And so you can listen to our programs on the Internet 5 hours a day, shortwave 4 hours a day. Go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. You can see our stations across America. A lot of them only have us half an hour a week, but half an hour a week the people are hearing the truth. And this then can be a stepping stone to other and additional knowledge. And we're so fortunate to have a voice now and to have access to the Internet. I've been at this game for 42 years, and I'm more optimistic than I've ever been before. David, I didn't mean to cut you off there. Do you have a parting thought for our listeners?
Yes, I'd like to say that they should read your book, because your book puts it all in perspective. And my book will be coming out probably later on this year. It's a real work. The title of the book is going to be called Roots and Wings: Faith, Friendship, and the Vietnam War. And they can check my website at www.telsonusa.com, which will be up in a few weeks. We'll have links to your website there, Dr. Dan, which is an excellent website, by the way. You know, you can download all the programs, which I've been doing. And I want to thank you, Dr. Stan, for this opportunity, because there's not much truth being told over the airwaves these days. And thank God for the Internet, because the Internet is going to, I think, is going to do away with all of this controlled media, especially when we have a forum like Radio Liberty to talk about these things. And pretty soon, it's going to be self-evident what the government's about. Just people keep their eyes open and pray.
Amen to that, and I think the most important thing is going to be prayer. God bless you, David. Thank you so much for being with us, and I will call you, and we want to get you on our other programs. We certainly want to have you on when we get those when you get that book finished.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. God bless you.
You too. Bye-bye. Well, that was David Tedeschini, and I hope you enjoyed our program. A lot of information we've covered, but a lot of very information, good information from a man who was there and lived it. And that poem he had written is a beautiful poem. I'm certainly going to get the book. If the other poems are as powerful as that one, hopefully this will touch people's hearts, because poetry is a way not only of touching the mind, but touching the soul as well. Well, this is the time when we just hope that remind you that Radio Liberty would appreciate hearing from you. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, we'll be glad to send it to you. And then, of course, we hope you'll want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, our video, Iraq, the Untold Story, our new videos, Iraq, the Road to a World Government, and, of course, Sustainable Development is another video, Sustainable Development of the Road to World War III. Our Sustainable Development syllabus, so much information out there. Help us to get it out. And then, as David said, pray for America. Pray for our leaders, our ministers, for revival. But please remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until Monday, when we'll be back with you once again, this is Dr. Stan saying goodnight, and may the Lord be with you.